Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Busy day on the Steve Jones Show today. Steve Jones in the Chateau in just a few minutes. Tim Tebow is a Jet. Fines and suspensions as well coming down for the Saints. 1 year for the head coach, the defensive coordinator, indefinitely. That's one serious suspension there. Is it an example time? That's what we'll talk a little bit more about later on today as well. And as we chatted yesterday, one of the biggest free agents still available is not free agent. Is not a free agent that's still available anymore because he's a 49er yet again, Alex Smith. One of the big free agents still left is now, again, a 49er, signed a $24 million deal after shopping himself around a little bit. So lots of stuff to talk about. We'll have Dave Paulson on the program as well, talking about the Bucknell Bison season, going to the NIT, not only for the first time, but winning their first NIT game. How are you, sir?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well.
You've been in your glory today.
It's been a busy, busy day, hasn't it?
It has.
Where to start?
Your boy got traded.
Yeah. And you know what? There was a little confusion on the draft pick deal. There were a sixth and a seventh pick. Is that what was traded as well in the back on the back end of that trade?
Yeah.
I mean, the one report I saw was a little bit confusing, but that's a lot of draft picks going all over the place. Tebow headed to the Jets for a fourth round pick, and Denver will get the sixth round pick from New York and give New York their seventh. Is that the way it goes?
Yes.
The one story I had was a little bit confusing, but. And it really seems strange that he would go to New York to be the backup.
It's perfect. This is Brad Smith, my man. This is exactly the element that's been missing from the Jets. The Jets were very effective offensively when they went with the change of pace with Brad Smith, who then eventually signed with the Buffalo Bills and left the Jets. And when the Jets went wildcat, which had been a part of their offense and had been the change of pace that had helped make them effective, it was LaDainian Tomlinson last year.
But that means
you have to have no. I'm not done yet.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
You have to have in Wildcat to really make it effective. What do you need? This is where you jump in.
Sorry, I was answering the phone there for a minute.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, now answer me. Ask me the question again. I'm sorry.
Okay. To be really effective in Wildcat, really effective with it, what do you need?
Well, you need somebody that can handle the quarterback position and not a wide receiver in that slot.
You need somebody, you need to have the threat of throwing the football.
Right. That's what I mean. It can't be a wide receiver like it normally is. And I think that's why they get him, and that's what I was just about to say. They list him as a backup quarterback, but really he's going to be the Wildcat guy.
That's exactly what he'll be, and that's an element that the Jets have used effectively with Brad Smith. So this is now their Brad Smith. And that is what makes it a great move by the Jets. He is a role player at this stage of his life, Tim Tebow is, who eventually may develop into a good NFL starting quarterback. But this will help. He'll be able to help them right away.
Eagles fans are disappointed right now. Miami fans have just thrown in the towel.
Well, I suppose they all have, yeah.
Dave, I suppose they all have. We can get back to a little bit more of this, but we have Dave Paulson from the Bucknell Bison to talk with you.
It is a privilege to have the head basketball coach of Bucknell Basketball on with us, Dave Paulson. Dave, welcome to the show. It is great to talk with you, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much. Great to be on.
All right. I want to get to an overall question first. In recent years, the Patriot has now picked up victories over Kansas, Arkansas, Duke, and Arizona. Three of those four, by the way, belong to Bucknell. What does that say about the caliber of play in the Patriot?
I think it speaks really highly to the caliber of play in the Patriot League, and just raises our national profile. And obviously, I'm at Bucknell as a coach because of seeing the reality or the possibility that Pat Flannery and those groups in 2005 and 2006 were able to do against Kansas and Arkansas, and every player on our program is here because of they saw what had happened. And I think obviously even the publicity that Bucknell generated probably helped Lehigh in their recruiting efforts. Like, hey, you can do this at a school like Bucknell and Lehigh, and I think hopefully it'll only continue to raise the profile of the league.
For you to go out to Arizona the way you did, play the kind of ball game you did, after the, quote, disappointment of the Lehigh game, what did that tell you about the mental makeup of your team?
Well, I think it spoke really highly to our guys. You know, we had great passion and great leadership, and, you know, it's been a tremendously fun group of guys to coach all year long. They worked extremely hard, had a bullseye in their back every single game, and, you know, again, we're disappointed that we didn't win our tournament championship, but in the big picture, to win a conference championship regular season is a harder task. To be consistently good over the span of a 14-game schedule, home and away, you know, is really a phenomenal testament to those guys. And obviously we came up one possession short against Lehigh, and it was hard to bounce back, but they did, and they did it in resounding fashion. And then I think obviously Lehigh demonstrated to the rest of the world what we've known for quite some time, that they're a very, very talented and capable team.
In fact, Dick Girardi and I were doing an online chat. I was helping him out. He was just saying, hey, help me with a couple of answers. And he said to me at one point, before the tournament began, he says, best player nobody knows about going into the tournament. And I said, C.J. McCollum of Lehigh. Would you concur with that answer outside of, you know, as somebody who knows him pretty well?
Well, I'm a little partial to Mike Muscala.
I mean into the NCAAs.
Yeah, but absolutely. C.J. McCollum, you know, and it's funny because we know how good he is, but we hadn't seen him up close and personal against, you know, the quote-unquote high major teams. I turned to Brian Cohen. I'm like, well, I know one thing. You did a heck of a lot better job guarding him than anyone from Duke did.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, he is a phenomenal player, phenomenal talent. He was unequivocally the best player on the floor against in the Duke game, and was able to get his shot against Xavier. He just, you know, he was uncharacteristically cold, and otherwise they might still be playing.
By the way, I'm also partial to Mike Muscala, too. So.
Good. All right, good. I want to make sure of that.
I think, as Kevin will tell you, how many times, Kevin, have I talked about Mike on the show?
Oh, absolutely.
A lot.
Yeah.
He showed a special talent.
Yeah, and he showed why in that Arizona game, I thought.
Absolutely.
Now, give us, from the coach's perspective, the elements that Mike brings to the table. Some are obvious. Some are things that a coach watches a DVD and looks at and says, okay, look at that. That's something you don't see from the ordinary player.
Well, I think the most important thing that Mike brings to the table, and he brings it every single day, is unbelievable passion. And when your best player is your hardest worker and your most passionate guy, that bodes well for your team. And he is relentlessly obsessed with getting better. And I think that's the best thing about him. He competes every day in practice. Every shooting drill we do, if there's a number we have to reach as a team, or just, you know, sometimes the day after a game we just come in and shoot and just do silly shooting competitions. He wants to win everything. And I think that spirit, you know, permeates the entire team. And just this quest to get better. You know, and every year we've challenged Mike to improve something. When he got here, he wasn't strong enough to post up and score around the basket per se, and did a lot of 12, 14 foot jump shots and was very, very good, you know, pick and pop and the high post jump shot. And we challenged him, you have to be able to score inside. You know, you just have to be able to establish yourself inside, and you have to get yourself fouled. And he made great strides in that his sophomore year. And then we said, you got to do even better getting fouled, and you have to become a better rebounder. And I talked with some, you know, NBA personnel, and said, you know, he's got to get one rebound for every 3 minutes he plays. So if he plays 30 minutes, he's got to average 10 rebounds a game. And he came just short of that at about nine point something. I don't have my stats right in front of me. But, you know, he really stepped it up. 9.1 rebounds a game in 29 minutes a game. So he really stepped it up rebounding-wise on the offensive rebound. Came close to setting a single season record in terms of free throws attempted. So he just continues to improve every single day.
Give us an idea. I talked to Patrick Chambers about this before the Big Ten tournament began. And he had coached at BU 2 years, America East, and he got into the tournament a year ago with BU by winning the America East. And I asked him about the pressure in a one-bid conference when the tournament rolls around. What is the pressure like so the fans understand, from your perspective, in a one-bid conference when you know it has to be 3-for-3?
Well, you know, there is pressure. And as much as we as coaches and players, you know, like my job is to try to kind of combat that for our guys and not make them feel pressure, make them feel, you know, intense and focused, but also loose and confident. But it's hard because, you know, it's a one bid league. And, you know, I think to people who don't understand basketball, like, well, what happened to Bucknell? Well, we had an unbelievable year. We played well against Lehigh and they played great. And they continued to play great. And guys made tough, guarded shots against us. And then there is a pressure because there was just this sense, you know, of all the air being let out of the balloon after we lost. And anyone who saw that game, we were down 7, and there was no quit in our team. We fought and scratched and clawed back. But the sense that, you know, somehow the season wasn't successful because one possession – really, it came down to one possession separating us from going to the NCAA tournament or not. You know, fortunately, we were able to go to the NIT and make a little noise and put a little better ending, you know, to a body of work that was really phenomenal.
It was a phenomenal body of work. And as you know, I've been around this. I'll be going into my 31st season of doing Penn State. And there are a couple things that you understand right away. Number one is that sometimes when it doesn't go your way in the final score, it's because the other guy did a bunch of things right.
Right.
And the other part is that at this time of the year, it is a possession game, and there may have been 3 or 4 in the first half that could have swung it and 3 or 4 in the second half that could have swung it. Those are things that you understand with experience and time.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, for you, the NIT experience, in the end, being the regular season champion, you received an automatic bid. How valuable did you consider that experience to be as your program moves forward?
I think it was really, really valuable. And, you know, part of it was the need. I don't think any guy on our team wanted to play in the NIT on the day after we lost to Lehigh. And probably nobody in the 32 teams that went to the NIT. I mean, every single team in the NIT lost their game heading into it. Otherwise, they would be in the NCAA tournament.
In fact, I said that to Doug Birdsong. I said, you do realize there are 32 teams on losing streaks going into this thing, right?
Yeah, and there's no question about it. But, you know, one of the things I had to tell our guys, like, guys, this is life lessons. I mean, we're involved in intercollegiate athletics at a higher education institution for the teachable moments, for the learning that occurs, that things that you can learn playing basketball that you can't in an economics class. And part of it is, you know, you had extreme disappointment. You still got to roll up your sleeves and go to work the next day because that's something that's going to happen in life. And you can't wallow in self-pity. You got to bounce back up. And our guys did that. So one was just a life lesson for our guys and for the coaches who all felt, you know, devastated on that Wednesday night and the Thursday afterwards. But the other thing was we really wanted to play a high major team because we had not beaten a high major team since I've been here. Brian Cohen, the seniors, hadn't done that. And so it was great to go out of our region to play a high major team in a real hostile environment and to prove that, hey, we can do this. And so I think it validated a lot, and it was tremendously valuable. And then beyond that, we lost to a really good Nevada team that was, to be very candid, more talented and a better team than Arizona. But it also highlighted, hey, we've got to get stronger. We've got to get a little quicker defensively to play against these higher-level teams. We've got to become a little more determined. So I think it validated a great year, but also reinforced the need to be hungry and continually try to get better.
Moving forward, summertime is an important time for guys to build games. And then when they build that game, they go October 15th, and you're ready to get going with guys who have built games. When you look at your team overall, where do they need to build so that when you start October 15th, you have a great starting point with a foundation?
Well, I think the biggest concern for us, you know, and he didn't score a ton of points, but Brian Cohen was the best defensive player I've ever coached. And he gave us a chance every night when we played Lehigh, not to mention any other guy who could really score. You know, he took the kid, Kyle Fogg from Arizona, he didn't hold him to 5 points. He was on the bench when Kyle Fogg got his 5 points. So the kid didn't score against Brian. So we need to find a defensive stopper and probably, much like we had to replace Daryl Shazer by committee, we're going to have to replace Brian Cohen's defensive presence by committee. And then, you know, we need to find, you know, one of the things that we didn't quite get consistently all year was effective penetration from perimeter players. You know, so I think, you know, obviously we had the inside attack with Mike Muscala and Joe Willman. We had some terrific perimeter shooting from Cameron Ayers and Bryson Johnson, but we were inconsistent in kind of that mid-range area. So we need to improve in those areas. But I think defensively, handling more athletic guys and then being able to get dribble penetration, which is so pivotal in the college game today, those are the two biggest concerns that I have right now.
The NCAA tournament's down to the Sweet 16. How much of that have you watched? And do you bring a different perspective to the table because you're the head coach at Bucknell?
Well, you know, I didn't watch as much, which is a good thing, you know, because we were busy. So a lot of times I was watching film of Arizona, or I was watching film of, I guess it was, Nevada. You know, I was watching a lot of film in Nevada, and I might have had the TV on in the background, but you know, really didn't see much of the NCAA tournament games. I did watch both the Lehigh's games, you know, but I think at this point in the year, you know, everyone's playing great, and you know, I certainly give Kentucky an edge, a decided edge now, especially depending on what can happen with the Marshall kid from Carolina. But every year there's a surprise, and I'm sure there will be one more surprise getting to the Final Four.
By the way, Kentucky, they make the freshmen take an economics class because they may need it after their freshman year. All right. So...
Absolutely. That's a good
David.
Point.
David, absolute pleasure. We'll be talking many times along the way. Great respect for the job that you do and for your program. It's a program you should be very proud of, and Bucknell should be very proud to have you as their head coach.
Well, thanks so much, and appreciate being on the show. And anytime you need me, just give me a buzz.
Thanks so much. Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach at Bucknell, has done a great job, a phenomenal regular season where he took them through. Look, when you have to go through a body of work of 2 months, 2.5 months to build the best record, the regular season champ means a lot. And Bucknell was the regular season champ, and justifiably so. Dave Paulson doing a great job there. We'll come back with more after this.
Getting more than 30 miles per gallon on your current vehicle,
then get to Sunbury Motors Kia.
You can get up to 32 mpg on the 2012 Kia Sportage LX, starting at $21,975. The hamster-approved 2012 Kia Soul gets you up to 35 mpg. And Sunbury Motors Kia has 7 to choose from, starting at $14,730. Want more? How about the 2012 Kia Forte EX, up to 36 mpg? There's 5 to choose from, starting at $16,960. Sunbury Motors Kia also has the gas-sipping 2012 Kia
Kia Rio LX, which gets an incredible 40 mpg, starting at $14,960. Remember, every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 5-year, 60,000-mile basic warranty. Plus, at Sunbury Motors Kia, you get an extra set of tires. And right now, you can also get financing as low as 1.9%. Sunbury Motors Kia, on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
This is William Payne, music director and conductor of the Susquehanna Valley Chorale. You're listening to perhaps the greatest work by one of the world's foremost composers, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Requiem was Mozart's last composition, and the chorale will be performing this tremendous masterpiece at our upcoming spring concert. And we'll be joined by the SVC Orchestra, plus four world-class guest soloists, Kristen Dubenian-Smith, Caroline Wara, James Barbato, and Timothy Lefevre. Please join us for what promises to be a dramatic, audience-pleasing event.
Don't miss the Susquehanna Valley Chorale's performance of Mozart's Requiem, Saturday, March 24th at 7:30 and Sunday, the 25th at 3 o'clock, Zion Lutheran Church in Sunbury. Tickets online or at the door. Visit svcmusic.org. That's svcmusic.org.
March means not basketball. It's Susquehanna Heartland Wine Trail Month with Shade Mountain Winery. All through March, enjoy live entertainment each Saturday with local live bands and fun food pairings throughout the weekends. Admission is free with a wine trail ticket or pay a cover charge at the door. And don't forget to sample and purchase Shade Mountain's fine wines while you're there. It's a great escape from cabin fever and a terrific way to bring in spring. Shade Mountain Winery, Route 104 between Middleburg and Penns Creek. See more at ShadeMountainWinery.com.
Sherry Hill, Elise, Giovanni, and Flirt. All the best names for prom at the best place. Bride's Bouquet in downtown Selins Grove. This prom season, rock your style with beads, bling, and ball gowns. Shop at Bride's Bouquet and you will dazzle your date and your friends. Receive 10 to 20% off any in-stock prom gowns all month long. Bride's Bouquet has everything you can think of to make your style the ultimate in prom awesome. Bride's Bouquet, say yes to the best.
Well, welcome everyone back to the show. And it's been a big day. Now, Kevin is now reporting because he has inside sources.
Yeah, that's what it is.
There's a snag.
There is. There may be a snag. For those that follow the Steve Jones Show on Twitter, at Steve Jones PSU, you may have seen that ESPN now reporting that Denver and the Jets encountered a hang-up. Tebow has $5 million worth on, of language in his contract that would mean the Jets would have to pay Denver that much money, and the Jets may not be willing to do it, so it may nullify the trade.
I see. There'll be millions watching the NCAA basketball tournament, and you are consumed with Tim Tebow.
Everybody's concerned with Tim Tebow. What are you talking about?
A backup quarterback.
Probably the most known backup quarterback. And if this were happening on a Thursday or Friday,
How Drew Stanton feels. He deliberately signed with the Jets just to take the backup quarterback job to Mark Sanchez. But this is Brad. If it goes through, this is Brad Smith. That's who it is. The Jets were very effective when Brad Smith ran the Wildcat, because when you run the Wildcat, what separates the Wildcat from just putting a running back back there, such as Ronnie Brown with the Miami Dolphins, is that if you have somebody back there who also gives you the threat to throw, and there are some Bronco fans that will argue he doesn't do that, but if put somebody back there who is the threat to throw the ball, which Tebow is, then it becomes more effective. Brad Smith was a quarterback in Missouri. He gave you the threat to throw the ball. When Curtis Drake, what made him effective running the Wildcat for Penn State, he's already proven he can throw the ball. Threw a touchdown pass against Michigan State in 2010, or in 2009 out there. Threw a pass to Matt McGloin against Nebraska. When he went back in Wildcat, he gave you the threat of throwing the ball. Tebow does that. Mark Brennan from Fight On State after the news at the bottom of the hour on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Kevin Herento, who has spent the last 3 weeks monitoring every Tim Tebow move.
Tebow on the twos.
We'll have another Tebow update next hour. As once again, the trade right now is in doubt. Sean Payton suspended for 1 year as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. Mickey Loomis, the general manager, gets 8 games. Greg Williams, the former defensive coordinator, now is suspended at the moment indefinitely. And Steve Spagnuolo, who, by the way, does have head coaching experience, he was the head coach of the Rams, now may be the guy that's coaching the Saints next year.
Wait. Head coaching experience is definitely one of those gray area things. I mean, he was a head coach. Yes, I'll give you that. I'm not sure about the experience part, though.
And by the way, Shaka Smart, and as I mentioned on the show the other day, I didn't think he'd take the job. He has told Illinois he is not interested. So he's going to stay at VCU. It's a blow for you because I know you wanted him to coach Schickelamy.
I saw that, actually, that you were right. I just wondered how long it would take before you brought that up that you were right.
No, I talked to a number of people who said they didn't think that he really had his heart in going after that job. That's the only reason why. We bring in Mark Brennan, the editor of Fight on State. Mark, welcome. Great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, as always, Steve.
Yeah, and say hello to Kevin. Kevin, you can say hello to the guests.
Oh, now I can say hello. Oh, okay, how
are you? It's my fault. I'm sorry. I'm messing with my iPad here, and I was trying to get everything set up just in case I have to.
You were distracted from Kevin's presence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Know the feeling.
All right. Now start the interview.
Start what interview? Look, I thought it was important to include you in the show.
I appreciate it.
At the same time, tear you away from Tebow Mania, of which you have traded in all of your orange garb for green.
Yeah, I wonder how much, you know what, that's a good question. How much are Tebow jerseys going on eBay right now?
Depends which team, right?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, there could be.
I'm assuming the Denver ones are kind of cheap.
There's a couple of them right now you could come up with, I'm sure. But yes, I was referring to the Denver ones. I'll take a look at that here.
You take a look at that, since it's of incredible importance.
I'm going to send you one for your birthday next year, so you have it.
I'm sure there's somebody I can give it away to. All right. We're here at the Sunbury Motor Studio, and joining us here at the Chateau is Mark Brennan from Fight on State. Mark, let's just do a quick recap. Penn State basketball, you were at Patrick Chambers' press conference the other day, Trey Lewis transferring out, Mac Glover transferring out, and then proclaiming, Patrick did, that DJ Newbill and Tim Frazier could make up, in his opinion, the best backcourt in the country. Your thoughts on what you heard Monday?
I think there may be a connection there. You know, number one, I think both of those kids probably realized how good Newbill is. Not probably. I mean, they definitely did. They were playing against him in practice every day. And it's funny because a lot of people kind of push the panic button over Burke. Over Lewis, yeah. I'm getting my trays messed up. Excuse me. Over Lewis. And it would have been the reason to press the panic button if you had lost Trey Burke again. But, you know, he was a kid who, from everything we heard, just wasn't. Patrick was riding him a lot during practice. And all practices weren't open, but when you keep your ear to the ground a little bit, I think it just wasn't. He was a guy who had committed under Ed, and I just don't know that it was a good fit. And I don't think that either one of those losses are gigantic in the sense that you do have Newbill, you do have Jermaine Marshall. But depth, I think, could be a concern at this point. Now, would either one of those guys, Glover or Lewis, want to have been guys who provide depth? I really don't know. The thing about Glover, I'd actually think long-term Glover could be a bigger loss. And here's why. When you watched him play, just a physical kid, he's a physical presence, defended real well. He really did everything well, rebounded extremely well for a size, except shoot the ball. And it's weird because in talking to Joe Crispin, who was injured and back from over in Europe for a while before heading back, he said in playing with Glover all summer, he's real not a great shooter, but a good shooter. And for some reason, it just went haywire on him. I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he didn't have a field goal in the last 11 games.
The last game he hit a shot.
Yeah.
Was January 22nd at Indiana.
I had a feeling you would know.
And the last game he hit a three-point shot
right.
was December 3rd against Ole Miss.
Exactly. So, and
I'm not saying this to cut down a guy that I think is a hard worker.
And
handled other parts of the game, rebounding, defense, passing, very well. I'm just stating the fact that they were playing 4-on-5 offensively at times because he had lost confidence.
And you could tell. And that was the thing. They would swing the ball to him on the wing. Early in the season, he was shooting without hesitating. And he would not even – and that makes it very difficult for a guy like Tim Frazier because everybody's already not collapsing but focusing in on you. And to not have a release valve, and then once you lose Billy Oliver, you have absolutely no release valve. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, Marshall – and Woodyard both were able to, make some outside shots. But to have one person out there, as you said, you know, it makes it sort of 4-on-5, and they were challenged offensively the way it was. And I think what you have to really wonder, and we'll probably never know, but I think you could assume that as he struggled away this far away from home for the first time, he's a California kid, it had to be difficult for him. And I'm not here being negative over either of those guys, but I do think – long term, the bigger loss because of what he brought to the table is going to be Glover, because I think if he could have gotten the confidence back, and we've seen that happen with people. We've seen people who, struggled with their shot early.
David Jackson as a sophomore struggled until the NIT, and then once he missed two critical free throws at Georgia Tech early in the season, his sophomore year. And he was an 80% plus in the final 4 minutes, and he missed two. Penn State won the game by one. But it affected him long term and never got his offensive game back into gear until the NIT. And when he got it back, well, suddenly Penn State became a better team. So sometimes that happens a period of time.
And with this kid, I think he did enough things well that he could have been a complimentary player to both of the quote-unquote star guards. He could play three if you need him to play three, a lot like Titus Ivory. They would use him there. I mean, if you could really judge, but when you were standing next to this kid, there was a bit of a physical presence. I mean, he was a solid, 215, 220 pounds. He was not, and that there still isn't. So I wish him well. I mean, the difficult thing is going to be that he's already been to a junior college, now to Penn State. He has a year to sit out, but it'll be interesting to see where he lands. In terms of Lewis, have you heard about where he...
Don't know where. My gut is that he's a Mid-American Conference guard.
Yeah.
And I'll say this about Trey Lewis. He can shoot the ball. So offensively, he brings that skill to the table. What he'll need to do to be a better player is he has to be a far better defensive player and then bring to the table the idea that defense creates offense. And the next part is, as a shooter, he needs to be far quicker releasing his shot.
Yeah.
He needs screens to get a shot off because he doesn't. And that's why he had so many threes that were blocked this year. You look at John Cherna, who does not have a good-looking shot and a shot
right.
that technically should be blocked, but his release is so lightning quick, he never gets it blocked. Trey takes too long to release it. He's going to have to quicken his release to be a far more effective offensive player.
There's two other things that jumped out at me, and one was he had a poor assist-to-turnover ratio. And when you have Tim Frazier on the team, that should not be the case. I mean, it would be interesting to go through and see how many – Frazier accounted for all of those baskets, all of those assists. I wonder how many times – and maybe you do know this, maybe you don't, but – I wonder how many times people actually had assists passing to Tim Frazier, because it sure seemed to me like 90% of the time he was creating for himself, which I think makes his season all that more amazing. But the other thing about Lewis, and I forget which game it was early in the season that I was listening to, and you were doing the game with Dick Girardi, and he stepped out of bounds like two or three times in a game. And I'm thinking, when you're listening to it on the radio, because the game wasn't televised, it's such a more powerful thing because you're sitting there envisioning how on earth do you possibly step out of bounds? And then when you saw him do it in person, I mean, he had to do that five or six times throughout the season, which may not seem like a lot, but that's five or six extra turnovers that are just senseless.
The court in men's basketball
it doesn't change
is 50 feet wide
right.
on every level. All right. It didn't change. It didn't become 47 feet in the college level and suddenly you're adjusting to it. It's 50 feet wide in junior high, high school, college, and the NBA.
And it's not like when we were kids playing at playgrounds where one, you know, the school was out of bounds. One,
right.
There was a tree in the corner.
That's right.
One is the chain link fence. Yeah. You know, one's a 9-foot basket, one's a 12-foot basket. Everything is uniform. So, but I could see where that sort of thing drove Pat Chambers nuts. And I could see where if that wasn't addressed properly in practice, if there were those sorts of lapses in practice, because you would see them even in the portions of practice that were open, they would get on those guys if they so much as missed a layup. They wanted to be perfect on every, you, there's no reason you should ever miss a yeah. layup. And that's the same basic principle. You should never step out of bounds. So all that said, right. Listen, they're going to be fine in the backcourt unless there are some, you know, knock on wood, some rash of injuries. I think the big question to me with respect to the men's hoop program here at Penn State is going to be what they're able to get out of their bigs. John Graham to me was a guy who looked like he really came along as the season went along. I wasn't so bent out of shape over him struggling in a couple of clutch free throw situations because I think the more he plays, the more comfortable he'll get. And frankly, in one game, he really did step up big time and knocked it down and helped them win a game against Iowa, yeah. To me, Sasha, I wonder about, and I know he's a hardworking player. I know he missed a year with an ACL, but, you know, Patrick's trying to get across that, you know, he's basically a freshman. Well, you know, he's 22 years old. He's going to be 23. And I just wonder when you get to be that age, are you still able to improve the way that you need to improve? And beyond that, you know, I haven't seen a lot of the Ackerman kid. I mean, I'm sure you've seen more of him than I have. And I'm just wondering what they're able to do down low. So, you know, that to me was a real glaring thing. They had no inside-out game whatsoever. Right. And if you look at the – it's funny because when you watch the NCAA tournament and, you know, I think we're spoiled sometime watching some of these really well-coached teams in the Big Ten, you know, the Michigan States, the Wisconsins, and the way they're able to work that inside-out game is ridiculous. I mean, it's unbelievable the way they're able to do things. And I'm not saying Penn State was poorly coached. I just don't think it's in the skill sets of these bigs to do that. And to me, it's just another thing that made Tim Frazier's season all that more amazing. I mean, if you look, I mean, those two guys combined, I think, for, you know, less than 15 assists on the year, you know, playing hundreds of minutes. It's hard to, you would think just by dumb luck, you'd get a couple more. So as I look at it, you know, you may well have one of the best backcourts. I think saying the best backcourt is having not seen the rest of the nation. Because I focus so much on Penn State stuff. But I will say this. Last October, Pat Chambers told me and told a lot of other people that he thought Tim Frazier was going to be one of the best guards in the nation. And we're thinking, ah, this guy, 5 points a game last year. Yeah, he looked good in a couple games. Come on. I mean, this guy, he's coming in automatic, you know, right off the bat blowing smoke. And you know what? He was right. As you look back on it and you look statistically what Tim Frazier did, he was one of the best. And as I watched the NCAA tournament, I'm thinking, geez, if Tim Frazier were on this team, you know, how good would they be and how much better would that make him? So I know I'm kind of rambling on about it, but I do think they're going to be fine in the backcourt. I like Ross Travis. I think he brings so much to the table. The kids they're bringing in are going to make an impact not only this year but the following year. I'm anxious to see what they're able to do with some of these scholarships that have opened up. But I really think a lot of it's going to focus on, you know, if they could somehow get, you know, one of these fifth-year transfers, I don't know if it could be a JUCO, you know, just a solid, solid big guy. I think it would be huge, and I think that could put them right in the middle of the Big Ten pack next year. That's a big if, though, because everybody's looking for a solid big guy. If they were easy to get, everybody would have them.
We're with Mark Brennan to fight on State. We'll shift gears to football in a moment after this.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is going to make the month of March Sunbury Motors Hyundai Month. During the month of March, test drive any new Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai, and you'll receive a $15 Brewers Outlet gift card. Why should you test drive a new Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai? Well, listen to these awards. The 2012 Hyundai Sonata is the winner of Lowest Cost of Ownership by Kelley Blue Book. And the 2012 Hyundai Elantra was named Best Car Under $20,000 by AOL.auto.com. Every new Hyundai comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. And every Hyundai purchased at Sunbury Motors Hyundai receives an additional set of tires. If you're looking for a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, or at sunburymotors.com.
Susquehanna Valley RV.
Get up and get away this camping season with help from Susquehanna Valley RV, Route 522 Sealands Grove, and Route 11 Bloomsburg. Get in now and see for yourself there is an RV priced right for you. They have been sharing the camping experience with people just like you for over 29 years. New RVs arriving daily and friendly financing is no problem. Due to the success of the Bloomsburg Fairgrounds RV event, Susquehanna Valley RV is offering top dollar on trades. Check out the parts department for all the camping accessories. Susquehanna Valley RV backs all sales with a fully experienced service department to keep you camping longer. They know there is an RV that's right for you. Susquehanna Valley RV will show you how. Route 522 Sealands Grove and Route 11 Bloomsburg.
There's an exciting new world waiting for you at Susquehanna Valley RV. A camper's best friend.
This is William Payne, music director and conductor of the Susquehanna Valley Chorale. You're listening to perhaps the greatest work by one of the world's foremost composers, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Requiem was Mozart's last composition, and the chorale will be performing this tremendous masterpiece at our upcoming spring concert. And we'll be joined by the SVC Orchestra, plus four world-class guest soloists, Kristen Dubenian-Smith, Caroline Wara, James Barbato, and Timothy Lefevre. Please join us for what promises to be a dramatic, audience-pleasing event.
Don't miss the Susquehanna Valley Chorale's performance of Mozart's Requiem, Saturday, March 24th at 7:30 and Sunday, the 25th at 3 o'clock, Zion Lutheran Church in Sunbury. Tickets online or at the door. Visit svcmusic.org. That's svcmusic.org.
Weekdays from 10 a.m. till noon, join Dan Patrick on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
That's something you got to think about. Who would play you in a movie?
Jason Bateman. Not that I had that answer ready.
And you're about what? Are you 6'3", 6'4"?
6'3".
I'm not sure what he is, but most actors you see on television, you think they're 6 foot and they're like 5'6".
They're stumpy. Who would you, I'm thinking?
Dude.
For you. Jason Statham.
Statham, that's what I was going to say.
Right. Dan will talk all things sports and more. Dan Patrick, weekdays 10 till noon and again from 7 to 10 p.m. Only on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.
Our final segment with Mark Brennan from Fight on State. Kevin Hur continues to monitor everything Tim Tebow, and in the next hour he will wow the masses with his Tim Tebow knowledge, and I'll try and insert other sports that are actually more important at the moment.
Oh, good. So you're going to do your part is what you're saying. That's great. Thanks.
Yeah, that's great. Mark, spring practice begins for the Nittany Lions, and Bill O'Brien's first spring practice at Penn State. Your feel going into what should be a very interesting 4 weeks?
I think it's not just me. You know, in what we do, a big part of what we do are our forums, where fans are you know, obviously speaking their mind and not afraid to speak their mind at all. But I think the general sense is that people are really excited for something new. And I don't think it's disrespect toward the previous, coaching staff and obviously Joe. But I think this new era is here and people are anxious to see what it's all about. I mean, this blue-white game, to me, I mean, if the weather, well, I know it's kind of a stupid statement because if the weather's nice, it's always packed. But I think it'll be even more so this year. From what we've been able to gauge from the availability of players and stuff, they seem to all be on board so far. I mean, it's almost incredible to me that if, unless I'm misreading this, and I just went through our roster and updated it online, you know, the only real transfer that they've had is Kevin Newsom, and that obviously had nothing at all to do with everything that's gone down here. So, and to hear the way the players have kind of, you know, rallied around the program, I think there's good reason to be excited. And again, I don't mean that in a negative way, but sometimes, listen, this was a change that, that happened. And ultimately, I think Penn State, I think this football program is going to be pretty good. I mean, the way, the job that they've been doing recruiting has been unbelievable. I think some of the changes with the weight, the strength training program, the players seem real enthusiastic about it, and you can see where there could be some benefits there. Now it's all a matter of what happens when they get them out on the field. So that's what we're, that's where we're at. We have all this enthusiasm. One of the cool things is O'Brien has much said that. I mean, he said, oh, you know, we haven't played a game. We haven't had an actual practice. You know, they've had these off-season workouts and stuff, but they haven't had a practice. So this is where we start to find out.
What will you look for as a couple of swing things in the spring that, in, that would indicate to you when you see a blue-white game that it's going in a positive direction?
Well, I think we already have a pretty good feel that the camaraderie within the team is strong.
It's very strong. Yeah. I will state that as being around it. To be honest with you, I walk in that locker room, there are 100 guys that'll run through a wall for the guy right now.
Right, and that's one of the things where I think it was really intelligent on their part to open up some things, to let the media get a feel for, and then the ability to talk to players a couple times during the offseason, you really got that sense. For me, it's going to be more about, you know, one thing I'm anxious to see on Monday, are they going to have the entire practice open? I'd be interested to see how his practices would differ maybe from the previous staff's practices. We only were allowed into a couple of those over the years, but you had a pretty good feel for the way things worked. And from talking to coaches and stuff, you kind of knew how things worked. You know, is there a different structure, that sort of thing. But in terms of positions, you know, to me there are the two key positions to me, and I'm not going to throw quarterback in there because I think a lot of things could still shake out there.
Yes, they could.
An awful lot of things. But I think the offensive line, obviously. They're going to be fine at skill positions. Obviously, at tailback, they're, you know, you have a great one, and then you have a couple of really good ones behind them. But a lot of it is going to go to that offensive line, which, you know, I've been on record as saying I don't think that's been the best managed group over the past 8-10 years, maybe. That's not to say that they haven't had a couple of really good offensive lines and that some guys have gone on to do some good things in the pros, but that's one area that I've been critical. The other area that I haven't been critical of, but I really have to worry about as you look at it, is the secondary, and especially a cornerback. I mean, to me, you have one natural cornerback, and Stephon Morris. That's to me. Now I'm not dogging Amos, but I think he's big. I mean, he's a big kid to be playing cornerback. Can he do it? Yeah, he can definitely do it. But I also wonder if he might not be a better fit at safety. And then, you know, clearly Derek Thomas is a guy who can play cornerback, but how much can you rely? And that's, there's always something going on. Will he be here? Will he not be here? So really, I'm anxious to see. When you hear Butler talking about, you know, being willing to play, you know, six defensive backs and different things, which everybody does, but who are those six defensive backs going to be? Because at corner, you know, I don't care what Danton Lynn ran, and I don't, and at the combine, he played some pretty good corner for them. And, you know, Chaz Powell was a very functional player for them for several years. And, you know, I know that the safeties, Astorino and Suke, you know, took a lot of heat. But at the end of the day, they played a lot of football and some very good defenses. So as I look at it, those are the areas, secondary, offensive line, that I'll be keeping an eye on.
Mark Brennan, Fight On State. As always, a great pleasure, my friend. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, coming up in the next hour, Kevin Herr will spend 50 4 minutes of Tim Tebow talk.
That's about time.
Fans have been anxious to jump in and give their opinions of their hero.